Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to this week's Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're speaking with Damien Hall about how to build mileage without getting injured. That's a dream ticket, isn't it?
Oh my goodness.
More miles, no injuries.
I hope he knows the answer.
No idea, gents. Thanks for having me on. No, can we talk about something else?
Genetics. Goodbye.
Yeah. It's an interesting one though, isn't it? Because I think you and I, like neither of us could claim to be high mileage runners.
Nope.
And maybe that's, you know, the reason for that might have changed. But there's certainly a period in my life where I would like to have been a high mileage runner, but I just felt like I just couldn't get my body on board with the idea of running, let's say, high mileage. For me, might have been like 50 plus miles a week. I was like, no, there's no, how on earth do people do that and not break down?
I do look back at some weeks or some mileages from weeks of a bygone era when I was just casually like run commute in, and then on a Friday I'd always make Friday like my longer run commute, and just for fun would like make it like 10, 12 miles or whatever, and just would cash. That would just be a nice start to the day. And I mean, most of this has sort of fallen at the wayside with the development of children. But yeah, I mean, it's just you sort of look back on those sorts of mileages and you kind of go, oh, if I'd known everything now and applied it back then, I could have been up in the 70s or 60s. Do you know what I mean? That could have been my time. But there's always time, Rick. There's always time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I've never, even training for marathons, my mileage never was massive.
Yeah. So I think we've both got some interest in this one, because Damien's someone who obviously started running late, mid 30s. And now has gone on to break records. He came fourth at the UTMB, holds various FKTs around the country, and runs high miles. So it's kind of it'd be really interesting to see how essentially a kind of normal bloke gets into that and is able to sort of sustain high mileage. Because I think it really is a fine art to be able to do it and not get hurt.
I'm not sure how he's going to feel about you calling him normal.
No, he's the underdog, isn't it? That's his brand, isn't it? He's the underdog.
That's true. That veneer is slipping because he's doing too well in everything. Yeah, yeah. I don't think he can't be considered that anymore.
Can you still be the underdog
when you're good?
Yeah, too good to be the underdog. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right. Well, I reckon we get on our guest of the week.
Let's do it. Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete.
Could be a physio. Or our guest this week is ultra runner, author and running coach Damien Hall. Among his many achievements are a fourth place finish at the UTMB and a fastest known time on the Coast to Coast Trail. Remarkably, he didn't start running properly until his mid-30s and is here today to talk about how to build up your mileage sensibly without getting injured. So Damien, welcome back to the Runner's World podcast.
Hello guys, thanks for having me.
No, great to have you on. As I mentioned in the intro, you didn't get into running until you kind of mid-30s. How many miles a week were you running when you kind of first started to get into running in a sort of semi-serious way?
Oh yeah, well I guess what I can see now helped me was that I wasn't running, but I was playing football regularly, which I now think of as interval, you know, short interval sessions, and I was really into long distance walking, or just walking at the weekends, hill walking, I suppose, albeit only not in the mountains, but you know, in the Cotswold Mountains. I can see now that was prepping me really well, and I do think I see a correlation between sort of new runners who have been doing other sports and maybe new runners who are sort of totally fresh to well, not, no one's totally fresh because you do PE at school, but people have, you know, not looked after themselves for, you know, maybe a decade, and then they jump off the couch and do 5K and then onto sort of half marathons. And as you can probably guess, those with a, you know, more of a sporty background are usually a bit more robust, which is quite a long way to answer your question, which was, how much mileage was I doing? I think I probably ran, three times a week for those first sort of couple of half marathons. But I would, yeah, I would go for a walk at the weekend, you know, sort of 3-4-5 hour walk. And then I'd play football once or twice a week. So I was actually probably exercising 6 days a week, you know. So when I think about it, and this is pre-Strava or pre-Strava for me, yeah, there was quite a few hours of fitness there, I suppose. But the actual running mileage was probably only like 20 miles, you know, 20 to 30 miles a week. Yeah.
But that endurance base, the walking must have delivered. It's kind of, we had Tom Craggs talking about the long run and how to get the most out of your long run and the different sort of approaches to that part of a training plan. And it's kind of almost like that walking was your long run, right? That's kind of initially where it came from.
Yeah, I think so. And again, it's sort of time on feet. And then I quite quickly gravitated towards trail running and ultra running. And of course, as we know, ultra running's little secret is that we walk half of it, you know.
So, don't tell anyone.
Yes, yeah. But certainly when it comes to, a hill of most types, actually, I mean, we always say, oh, we're preserving our muscles, but there might be a bit of laziness in there too. But yeah, I was already doing that. You know, I was already walking up the hills. And it probably does give a little bit of strength, yeah, so I was kind of already doing the long runs. I would say, and now we call that cross training, of course. So yeah, I would say, you know, someone with a cross training background, they've already got some fitness and some strength. I do think that helped me. Early on.
Well, when you started then to sort of have the desire or the necessity, the need to start running further and to build your mileage, how did you progress that? Was it that the walking became the runs, or did you just sort of mix it up with more tempo stuff and the football took a back seat and all that sort of stuff?
Well, yeah, with the football, I definitely remember a moment of, I became very fearful of injury. I don't think any sport is as, do we have this fear of injury like we do in running? Before that, I played football, you know, for decades and probably only got injured a couple of times. And both times it was a tackle, you know, it was never an overuse thing.
Yeah.
And actually I have looked into a study on this, and only basketball apparently has more injuries. And I suppose in that one, you've got quite a hard surface and contact as well. But yeah, it seemed like running possibly is the sport second most likely to injure you. I can remember a moment of thinking, I'm not going to play football because I might get injured for running. And that was quite a big moment for me of like, oh dear, I've become a runner.
That was it.
Well, yeah, I think I'd done a couple of half marathons, and I think I'd done that first marathon. And I don't really remember following a plan for the marathon. And that came back to bite me, because I think I'd only run, my longest run was 17 miles, and that's exactly where I hit the wall in my first race, which I believe now is that's the classic moment, the classic sort of distance where everyone hits the wall. But then I was doing my first ultra not long after, and I did follow a plan for that. I think it was provided by the race. And yeah, that meant I was getting out more at the weekends. My running, both my walking and my football sort of fell to the wayside, and it became more running. But now looking back as well, I was sort of cycling. I was doing some cycle commutes. So again, I still had a cross training element, which again may have helped, you know, produce fitness that wasn't all from just pounding the joints, I suppose. I followed a program, and a bit of cycling as well. But I still wasn't doing any sort of strength work, or I wasn't regularly visiting a physio or anything like that. So looking back, I feel a bit lucky, because that probably is the big moment where people get injured. It's that overexcitement, isn't it? Often after a race or two, and wanting to jump up to the next one. And I see it a lot of, you know, and I believe your sort of cardiovascular side improves quicker than the sort of physical, you know, it's usually lower limb stuff. It's usually the, you know, muscles or tendons. And I believe that takes a bit longer to develop than the cardiovascular. So often we're like, I'm really fit, I'm loving this. but actually our tendons down by, you know, around our ankles or around the knee are a bit slower to catch up, I believe.
Was there a tipping point then when all of this combined and you actually went, wow, I need to be doing X 100 miles a week now. If I'm going to go and do these things. And then you obviously, you know, you're a coach. You have educated yourself in what works for you and on all those sorts of things. So did you sort of, how did you then take this big leap into successfully adding so much more mileage?
I think there's a couple of things that seem to work for me. And one was simply I did have a coach for quite a lot of the time. And there then you are hopefully following a structure, you know, a structured plan. And I know it's probably one of the things most runners are bored of hearing about, you know, follow a structured plan. But there's a couple of studies on injuries. I promised you I'd done a bit of research, and I have. There's a 1992 study and a 2016 study into running injuries. And definitely the second study, the recommendation was, you know, the runners to complete their rehabilitation before rerunning, and to try and spot the early signs of overuse injuries, but also the provision of training guidelines. So I guess that idea of building up gradually, which is probably like the most boring advice that runners get, because, you know, build up gradually, the 10% rule, you know, that's open for debate exactly whether that's the right ratio, but like just that gradual build. And I suppose I learned from those coaches as well, often you don't just keep building 10% a week. From England Athletics, they teach this, you know, you have a medium week, then you might have a bit more volume. And then that fourth week is nearly always right down again, you know, an adaptation week or a recovery week, you know, it's a lot less. And certainly I've seen that with people as well. They just go up and up and up and up without those little breaks, those circuit breakers, if you like. So I think structured plan, boring advice, but really seems to be a thing. So I had coaches most of the time. At some point, yeah, strength work came into it. And I do feel, for me, especially as I'm getting well into my 40s, I do feel that really helps me. And it's another cliche, but that kind of listening to your body. I know it's the sort of thing, you know, we'd read on every other page in Runner's World, but, you know, being able to go, hold on, something's not quite right in my ankle or my knee today. Actually, maybe I won't run. And I see it with my athletes now. It's so frustrating when they say to me, oh, actually, yeah, my knee's been hurting all week. And now I can't walk. And it would have been, you know, it's so frustrating, because if we'd just taken a day off, or most physios would say the optimal might be 3 days, you know, for something acute to kind of finish its acute phase. So often a little step backwards early on, you know, means not a huge step back later on. So I guess that listening to your body thing, I guess I learned the hard way. Like most people, you get a couple of injuries and think, oh, if only I'd paid attention to that early sign.
With the strength work, Damien, is that something that you have perfected over the years? Because I think it's a phrase that gets thrown around a lot, and I think potentially runners end up doing too much of one thing or the wrong thing. Where have you arrived at in terms of strength work?
Yeah, I do go to, I've worked with a couple of very well qualified, you know, strength and conditioning coaches, because I really thought, you know, especially if I'm a coach, I need to understand this stuff. So I have gone to, you know, sort of knowledgeable people. And again, it just really depends on the individual. I think some people, it might be a lifestyle issue, especially if they spend a lot of time sitting down, for example, or a lot of time driving. They may need that extra strength around the hips, for example, or something like that. Some people seem to be okay without it and maybe don't need so much, but yeah, I'd go to those knowledgeable sources. And at the moment I probably do sort of an hour to 2 hours a week, which is probably more than most people need to do. And then sometimes I go in and see a guy, Coach D in Bath, and sometimes I have an hour session with him if I'm really getting into big training to sort of, and I see it differently now. I'm almost strengthening myself for the big training, whereas I used to think I'm strengthening myself for the race, but now I want to make sure I get through the training, you know, safely. But strength work, you know, it's one of several things, you know, several methods we could sort of attribute to hopefully staying injury free. There are a few other things as well.
How long do you give yourself? So when now you're aiming to do a race, what's your build up? Because we've become quite accustomed to, and certainly new runners will probably become accustomed to finding a plan that's 16 weeks, 12 weeks, whatever it is. And there's a sort of a ramping up of mileage during that time. How do you cope with the sort of the build up to these things now? How long are you giving yourself?
Well, I think the secret is almost, you know, if you're not forced to sort of detrain, then almost don't. I guess I'm, you know, if I'm not injured, I'm training all year round. And I don't, yeah, I will have a month, at least a month or two of sort of downtime, I suppose. But I'd probably still go out like five times a week in that spell and just run easy, you know, not big mileage, not much intensity. But the rest of the year, I'm probably, you know, I'm fit enough to run a marathon most of the year. That probably sounds quite annoying to some people, but like, I mean, I just love running.
You do have to be. I mean, you know, you are that, is it, as a racing man, I feel like the caveat being that you, it's not just a sort of sideline, it's what you do.
I suppose. But also above that, I just love it. I want to get out every day. I do have one day off, you know, I'm quite strict for myself and all my athletes, one day totally off, not even cross training. Ideally, not even the strength work. One day of complete sort of recovery, which again maybe a factor. With the I'm uninjured for pretty much 5 years, or uninjured through an overuse training injury anyway. But yeah, I just love it anyway. So I'm going to want to get out. And often it is that building up phase again where you might get issues. So I almost don't want to get too unfit because it's the scary climbing back up there. And also that's where the frustration is sometimes, where you're comparing yourself to how you used to be and so on. But yeah, you have to be, I mean, I do like the phrase sort of, you know, thinking holistically about your life. You know, anything, the things you're eating, your sleep, stress from work or relationships or anything else, you know, that's going to feed into your running. So I'd encourage people, and I always try to think, how's that going to influence your running? A classic example is, I don't know, you go out for a big night out, you know, should you run the next day? Is it better off to adapt your running to your life, I suppose?
Can we talk a little bit about nutrition, Damien? Because I know that for a few years now, you've been vegan or certainly vegetarian. How has that played into stuff like recovery? Do you feel... like you're recovering better now, or was the decision actually more of a kind of moral, environmental one, and it's actually made some elements of recovery more difficult?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I'm still probably pondering that answer. I think I've gone all full annoying vegan for about 18 months, but I'm very lucky in that I know you've had Renee McGregor on your podcast recently, and you know, she's a good friend, and I coach her, and she, you know, she's, I'm very lucky to get advice from her on this sort of stuff. So I did it very carefully. I didn't want to, I suppose, you know, miss a trick and be unhealthy. So I haven't, I don't actually think I've noticed any difference performance-wise or recovery-wise. I've certainly got friends who are very good runners who think it's been kind of revelatory to them in terms of recovery. I honestly haven't felt that. And I've done it for ethical reasons, for, you know, to cut down my sort of the carbon footprint from my food. And you know, there are good health, there's a good sort of argument for doing it for health reasons too. But I haven't, in terms of my training, I haven't noticed a difference. I think the dangers might be that you know, there's fewer calories often on your plate, and you might not always realize that. So you almost have to make a bit more effort to make sure you're eating enough, and obviously the protein as well, making a bit more of an effort to get that in. And then I do take some supplements now, sort of D3, B12, again, all with sort of Renee's guidance. But yeah, I haven't noticed any difference, which is a tiny bit disappointing, because some people have been going, I feel amazing, this is... And I'm like, oh, I feel the same. But, you know.
When you've had periods breaking down after certain efforts or larger mileage, how have you sort of... you know, you talk about calories, and that's obviously going to help, but how do you combat like the sort of the body almost fighting against you when you build up the miles?
Well, I do think the number one thing, there's this really good book called Good to Go by Christy, I'm gonna say this wrong, but Auschwanden, I think it is, and she this came out a year or two ago, and she's a journalist, and she looked at all these different sort of methods of recovery that we have advertised to us, I suppose, from protein shakes to ice baths and compression wear and sleep and foam rolling. And the number one thing, as maybe you can guess from all of that, kind of the conclusion was along the lines of most of these things have almost no impact, except sleep, which is amazing. And so I do see that as the number one thing. And when an athlete says to me, you know, not feeling great, my first question is, you know, how's your sleep been? Let's try and catch up tonight if we can. Well, their sleep rather than me interrupting the sleep by catching up. And then I would say probably less easy to verify, but probably after that, it probably is the food and making sure you're fueling adequately. And Rini, again, yeah, was on your show, just hammering home that message of yeah, you don't want to get into a state of energy deficiency, you know, and that could be, you know, certain hormones, you know, won't work or won't kick in. You know, we really want to be fueling well, especially around those key sessions, the longer runs and the intervals. And I do think, so you're throwing me back to, yeah, when I ran the Pennine Way a couple of summers ago, yeah, I was a complete wreck of a human being after that. You know, I was waking up in the middle of the night. I could barely walk. I was, yeah, a proper mess. So all I did was what I usually do after UTMB or something as well, is like sleep as much as you can, eat as much as you can. And yeah, the really sad moment is when third breakfast, you know, no longer feels like a sort of legitimate thing that you can have in your day. So yeah, there's usually at least a week after a big, you know, race or challenge, there's usually at least a week of no running, pretty much just sleeping and eating as much as I possibly can. I look forward to those weeks a lot.
Over the years, Damien, do you feel like you've ever done too many miles, and have you happened upon a sort of sweet spot for you now?
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Oh, that's a good question. Yes. Yeah, I think I did. I made some sort of work changes, which made me allowed me to have more hours to train. And I think I made the classic mistake of sort of thinking, well, I can train that much, so why don't I? So I was doing sort of 100-mile weeks, you know, mostly on trails, you know, lumpy, you know, in mountains and stuff, and you know, living the Instagram dream of sort of down mountains every day. Honest, I am. And luckily I didn't get injured around then, but looking back, I probably deserved to be. But I think my performance were definitely plateauing, probably regressing. Like I was probably just getting slower. I was probably just being tired all the time. I do think if there is a sweet spot for people, and there's loads of caveats with this, you know, look at the rest of your life, how much stress, how much time have you really got, how is your sleep, etc. But I would say if there's a sweet spot for someone who's really into this stuff, it is probably around the 70 mile a week mark, or you could say the 50 to 70 mile. I think I see that with some clients. And for me, yeah, if you look at, I'm on Strava, most of my weeks are sort of 65 to 75. And that seems, what you want above all else is that consistency. There's no point in doing 100 miles in a week if the next week you're running 15 miles or 20 miles, you're much better off running 50 miles if you can run the next week 52 miles or something. That consistency, you know, at least one study has shown that, and that's just what, you know, every coach sort of seems to believe as well. And it certainly has worked for me. It's that consistency you want. So if you do a little bit less mileage, but get another good week in next week, that's the thing to aim for, I think, for people.
What about the mental demands of high mileage? Because I guess it can feel a little bit relentless, can't it? If you feel like, right, I'm going to run X amount of miles a week and it's going to be the same next week or even more. How do you mentally prepare yourself for big mileage? Or is it just about making it as enjoyable as possible?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question, because, yeah, I think when that becomes difficult is, you know, most people are doing their longer run towards the end of the week. And if you've already done quite a lot of running, you know, if that starts to become a bit of a chore, then it could be that you are, you know, touching on some overtraining. But I must admit, you know, I have sometimes thought, oh, I've got to, you know, it's long run time and I'm less enthusiastic. So there's two things. Yeah, I think you try and run somewhere a bit more exciting, or a bit more, just a bit fresh, or, you know, try and run with a friend. But I would say if that's happening for a few weeks in a row, yeah, or a couple of days in a row where you're not keen on it, I would listen to that, you know, going back to that, listen to your body, you know, why not just have an early rest day? You know, it's not even, you may not even be missing out on any miles overall. You're just having that rest day early. Yeah, it's a good one. But, and also if you are thinking that, I guess, yeah, sleep and food, I'd jump on them, you know, get to bed an hour earlier, have some more cake. Yeah.
What about sort of building in flexibility? Because you say like move a rest day if you're feeling tired and you need it and all sorts of things. Because I think people following plans can kind of think that they're the hard and fast and you can't deviate from what's written in front of you. Especially when it comes to bigger mileage, you must complete those big miles because that's the be all and end all of what you're trying to get to. But how much flexibility do you give yourself? I mean, you have a day off, but if you needed to, could you casually write off a few days?
I would find that hard, but I would know. I think you've just got to think of the bigger picture and think, if I don't rest properly now, you know, I might be injured, I might miss this race. I've booked all the travel. I've fantasized about this race for years. I think you've just got to think of the bigger picture and to be able to do that. But I really encourage that with my athletes, especially, like, I don't know, you might think this morning's intervals and out you go and you just don't feel it. You know, you just feel a bit subpar, whether you can pin it on something or not. I would say to anyone, yeah, why not just do them, you know, in most cases, do them the next day instead. You know, just don't stress on it. It's not vital you do that exact session on that day. I think the people who can do that are the ones who get the consistent training. It sounds almost counterintuitive, because if you want consistency, you could be forgiven for thinking, oh, I must get out and do what I'm told. Like, that's consistency. But I actually think it's the opposite of that. I think it's going, actually, today's not the day for my intervals. And studies do show, like, probably intervals are a bit more related to injury than say the long run, or, you know, there's caveats there, but so yeah, the intervals is probably the one to be careful about. Then it's probably the long run, and yeah, why not? In fact, well, admittedly there was a storm going on, but at the weekend I was meant to do, I think, 14 or 16 miles in my long run, and I came home after about 12 and a half. It's partly because, you know, branches were blowing across the road in front of me and stuff, and I just thought, actually, my wife phoned up and said, we want you to come home now. So maybe that's a bit more of a unique circumstance, but I was perfectly willing. It was like, well, do I need to do the extra 2 or 3 miles? Do I really have to? I've got months of good training behind me, and I'm perfectly happy with that. And, you know, I probably missed my target on Strava for the week, I don't know, but, you know, I'm fine with that. I would think, always think of consistency. What's going to help you run better tomorrow or next week, I think, is the message.
I was just going to touch upon runners getting sort of drawn into competitive things like Strava and looking like they're doing thousands of miles on Instagram. How do you, apart from saying people just don't do it, how do you see that sort of fits in with when you're coaching or trying to sort of like keep running to yourself in some ways?
Yeah, that is hard. I would say, I remember reading a long time ago, actually, I think it was a bit of Rick's writing, actually, it was a tip from Robbie Britton about when you're out in the mountains and it's a glorious day, or you're out somewhere beautiful, you know, take lots and lots of photos for Instagram, and you can use them over time. You know, you don't have to put them all on Instagram straight away. So you've got them in the bank. So it means you don't have to go back to the mountains the next day. But so that's quite a good tip. But also bear in mind, I'm doing that. Other people are probably doing that, almost giving the impression, oh, I'm out running somewhere spectacular every day. And they're not. They're not necessarily. So yeah, it's not real life. And Strava is a tricky one as well. I must admit, I used to look at it a lot. I used to look at who I considered my rivals. If I was going to do UTMB, I would be looking at Jim Walmsley, you know, his training, and like, that doesn't help me. That doesn't help me seeing that he ran 160 miles. And then he turns up tired anyway and DNFs. So, you know, it doesn't really matter what other people are doing. If you can come off Strava, if that does trouble you, if you can come off Strava, great. But most people aren't going to, myself included. But I must admit, yeah, I don't really look at other people's runs on there anymore. My stuff goes up there. I don't really look. It's not that interesting. And I would say one of the biggest training mistakes, I think, I don't think there's an actual study on this as such, but like, is, yeah, not running your easy runs easy enough. And so when I do look at my clients, I'm never sort of hoping they've run quickly. I'm hoping they haven't run too quickly on the easy runs. And I think that's one of the dangers that Strava does to people, is thinking, well, my friends down the road might be looking at this. I've got to make sure my easy runs are, you know, 7 minute miles or quicker.
I can't have a 10 minute mile on there. I'd look like an absolute fool.
Well, I promise you, if you look at mine, there are those, that slowness. But it's dangerous. It's dangerous. And those people possibly end up getting injured or plateauing or regressing. So don't, you know, and honestly, ask anyone listening to this, how often do you look at a friend's easy run and look at their pace? Do people really care about each other that much? Occasionally I see an impressive interval workout or an impressive long run, but I'm not on a normal run. I'm not really looking at anyone else's. I'm not that interested, unless they're a client, I suppose. But it's a dangerous world, dangerous world.
Is there any way, Damien, with thinking about some high profile athletes like Steph Davis, doesn't run big miles, obviously won the British Olympic marathon trials, and I think she does a lot of swimming and cycling. What do you think about substituting mileage for those kind of things? Do you think it can be successful, or there's no real getting around the idea that you have to be putting a lot of miles in?
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. I don't know loads about her training, but there's one or two other, yeah, really high profile runners, you know, record-breaking runners who aren't running, you know, 5 or 6 days a week. I believe, is it Elish McColgan? I think she cross-trains quite a bit. Partly, I think she has a long-term issue that means she sort of can't run as much as some of us. So it can definitely work for people. Now, sometimes they've got a huge backlog of cardiovascular sort of build, which might help. But yeah, I don't think you need to. And some of my clients have done amazing things on sort of, I suppose, 4 or 5 days of running. What I would say with cross training is you've got to be interested in it. So like if you tell me to go swimming, I'm probably gonna, you know, flick a couple of fingers your direction. Swimming is not for me. I don't mind some cycling, but I don't love it. Like what I find is I can happily get up at 5 in the morning to go running. I'm not gonna get up at 5 to go cycling. I don't know what anyone else, and certainly not for swimming. So I think people have to be, you know, it's an individual thing where, you know, you have to be excited about that cross-training activity. Otherwise, it's probably not going to happen for long. But yeah, people have all sorts of success mixing things up.
I think it's good. I just want to ask you about Spine Race. Just wanted to ask you how it was.
It was amazing. Honestly, had the best time. And it's one of those times where, I don't know, sports psychologists talk about, you know, not thinking too much about the outcome goal, but the performance goal instead, or the process goal. And actually, you know, how I felt and the experience I had were wonderful. I didn't get the outcome because I didn't even finish the race, let alone kind of win it. And I was, you know, 4 hours ahead of the next guy and ahead of course record. And I developed a groin issue, which was really frustrating, getting over these big stiles. And it was just getting more and more uncomfortable. And I just couldn't imagine a way that I could continue for another 24 hours like that. And as soon as I stopped, yeah, I needed sort of a stick to even just walk, sort of thing. And the medics thought maybe I had a hernia. So I sort of physically, I mean, but that's the nature of the race. You know, it kind of beats you up. The ground is so slippery and sloppy and boggy and muddy. That's the spine race. It sort of grinds you down. And I've completed it twice before in the past, but I wanted to do a bit better this time. But yeah, I'm already,
great.
Already signed up for next year.
Great.
So, yeah.
Oh, of course. Of course. I think it's quite interesting that you're saying having the best time, because it really just, it was one of those things that it's a race of attrition, and that's what it's known for. But everything that we saw of you was like the man having the time of his life. Like, it was just like, and then sadly, obviously, then you picked up an injury. As you say, this is what happens in these races. But, you know, there were other things, that other pictures of the event that you saw, and maybe like people were having less fun, but they were just grinding through it. But you didn't, there was none of that. You looked like it was going great guns.
Yeah. I mean, I was absolutely loving it. I mean, I can't promise I was smiling, you know, 100% of the time, but it's a really special race. For various reasons, but what's amazing is the amount of strangers that just kind of turn up and offer support, whether that's a bit of a drink or a snack, or just cheering you on, and you know, but they'll turn up on, you know, in the dark, in the rain, in a like remote section of bog somewhere, just to like ring a cowbell or hand you a Haribo. And honestly, that's so just such a wonderful feeling that people will do that just to give you a slight lift. But honestly, that filled my heart with joy, and unfortunately, that joy wasn't enough to get me over all of those stiles. But yeah, I was having the time of my life until I wasn't.
We'll just have to. I don't know how you're going to cross train for stiles, but I'm sure you can work that out. There's going to be a lot of like some hurdles, and some sidestepping over them or something like that. Yeah,
that might be what I need. That might be what I need. There was just one more thing I thought of actually while we were talking is that sort of prehab. We mentioned strength training, but I do quite a lot of prehab things, I suppose. Like, I do see a physio preemptively. I've definitely got a friend who's very reluctant to see a physio, and he waits, you know, he's been injured 4 weeks, and then he'll try and get an NHS deferral to save money. And, you know, by that stage, not it's too late, but like, you know, you've missed out on loads of training. So I do go, obviously there's a cost involved, but I do go, you know, preemptively between sort of between 2 or 4 weeks semi-regularly. And then if I'm not getting those massages as well, foam rolling, all right, the science is a bit mixed, but it seems to work for me, seems to work for a lot of people. And then the old classic vibrating toys of various types can be pretty effective. We are still talking injury prevention here, but muscle guns and so on, I think they're good, and there is some decent science behind them. And the amount of times you
percussive therapy,
that's the word, yes, therapy. I think they're pretty good. And just so often when we get injured, it is, you know, often the painful area often isn't where the problem is it, like it's the hip causing the knee to do that or whatever. But if you're sort of dissipating some of that tight muscle, you know, you may be saving yourself some injury in advance. I can't promise it, but yeah, get the vibrating toys out.
When you focus on the prehab, are you focusing on troublesome areas that you've had before, or are you just going on high usage? So are you going hips because you know that they're, you have a disposition to be unstable there, or is it just because that is something that needs to be strong to run well?
Oh yeah, that's a good question. I think there's definitely, it's good to individualize it. So I know that it's often my calves that kind of get a bit overloaded, especially if the obvious thing, if I'm bringing more vert into my training. But they're usually the place that sort of complains first. So I'll, again, with stretching as well, that can be quite an individualized thing. And if I'm honest, I don't do loads of stretching, I'll be honest. But when I do stretch, it's definitely the calves first, because they're a bit troublesome for me. And then I'll, foam roll. And again, it'll be the calves that will need most attention for me. So, but then after that, yeah, I think people's lifestyles, again, usually it's not usually, but quite often it can be the sitting down problems. So that might be hips and glutes. I do usually use a standing desk most. Yeah, there you go. But yeah, some people can think of their lifestyles, whether there's much you can change. I'm quite into standing desks, although I still sit down. The danger with standing desks is you sort of start just leaning all day when you're not sitting down. So I do, you know, I take sitting breaks or whatever. So I think to answer your question, kind of both.
Damien, thanks so much for your time coming on the Runner's World podcast.
Thank you very much, guys. Catch up soon.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. Big thanks to our special guest, Damien Hall, and to you, of course, for listening.
You can subscribe to Runner's World magazine by going onto the internet and searching Runner's World UK subscription and then clicking on, hopefully, the right link. And then once you're there, you can do it. And that's the best thing you can do.
What an explanation. Amazing.
That's how the internet works. And if you want to know more about the internet, head to runnersworld.com/UK. And find out more about all the things you need to know about running. You know, training plans, nutrition, advice, tips, hints, hacks, the upside down topsy-turvy world of everything else. So yeah, go to the internet and do that. And then you'll hear from us again next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.